Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today's show, last week we talked about the debt ceiling there, but we have to have some comments about it again today, as all the media is saying they're closer to an agreement, and there are some items that they have a tentative agreement on. As I've been saying, this is all political theater. They're going to agree. The question is the time that they come to an agreement. Is it June 1st? Is it June 15th? Whichever it is, it's not going to be a default. The Treasury Department has a lot of cubby holes. It's already been moving money for months here to cover bills. So whether it's June 1st, as Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says, the default drop-dead date, or it's June 15th or whatever, they're going to be able to continue this because, as I said, this really isn't about debt ceiling. Debt ceiling is just the excuse to start the austerity process, austerity meaning cutting social programs, which always occurs following a deep economic recession, where they have to throw some money at folks to keep the thing from collapsing. And that's what they're doing right now. They threw $3 to $4 trillion here during COVID in proposals, bailing out small businesses, corporations, unemployed workers, poor folks, et cetera. And now they're going to try to figure out how to take it back, because their deficit is at $31.4 trillion, up from $22 trillion when Trump left office. It's really a combination of lack of tax revenue. Of course, when you have COVID, recession, tax revenues drop off dramatically. Businesses are not producing as much, and individuals aren't earning. So the tax revenue drops off dramatically, which is what happened from 2020 to early 2022 until the opening of the economy began. And at the same time, tax revenues are being whacked by the Trump tax cuts of 2018, which amounted to $4.5 trillion over a decade. So both of those slow or no growth virtually economy, recession, and Trump tax cuts really devastated government revenues, which devastate government deficits, which add to the debt. And that's exactly what happened. You know, people aren't aware that the deficit was 60% on average due to lack of federal revenues, tax revenues, and the rest is spending. Keep that in mind as we go forward, because clearly the Republicans do not want to touch the Trump tax cuts. And, of course, despite all the talk, neither do the Democrats. How much do the Trump tax cuts contribute to inflation? I mean, not inflation, to the deficit going forward? Well, the Congressional Budget Office just reported, if they don't reverse any of the Trump tax cuts, it's going to add $2.7 trillion to the deficit between now and 2030, or 2028, I think it is. $2.7 trillion more. We're only halfway through the Trump tax cuts, you see. The Trump tax cuts started taking effect in 2018. And, you know, it's about halfway through. And just the second half, next 5 years, it'll be $2.7 trillion more. Now, let's digress a little bit on the Trump tax cut and the CBO estimate of $2.7 trillion, because you still got liberal mainstream economists saying that the Trump tax cuts of 2018 were only $1.5 trillion. I've been having a running commentary on Twitter with Robert Reich, who keeps tweeting $1.5 trillion. And then another bill that was passed, so it's $2 trillion. And I keep saying, telling him, and he's not listening, it's $4.5 trillion. Because $1.5 trillion tax cut is predicated on the assumption at the time by Trump that the U.S. economy would grow at an average of 3.5% per year GDP for 10 years. Of course, we know that didn't happen. We had the big recession with COVID, and we've got such a tepid recovery going on, 1% growth in 2022, December to December, you know, slow economic growth, which means you don't have the revenues coming in, and therefore the deficits are bigger, and therefore you add all this debt. Now, let me say something about McCarthy on that question. McCarthy comes out to the media here this past week, and he keeps saying that, we've got the largest tax revenues as a percent of GDP in our history, 17%. Tax revenues are 17% of GDP. Oh, and our spending is the highest ever, 24% of GDP. Now, this is really disingenuous, and it's typical of how they manipulate and lie. When you say it's a percent of GDP, if GDP is low or going down, then of course your percentage is going up, even though your absolute level of revenues and spending is not going up. Now, there is some increase in the spending because of COVID. Yeah, spending did go up. And, of course, now we're in this throwing hundreds of billions of dollars at the Pentagon in the war. So that's driving it to some extent. And we got inflation going on, which causes government costs to go up. Yeah, so there is some increase in revenues. I mean, in spending as a percent of GDP, but GDP goes down, that exacerbates that number. You cannot reference spending or revenues as a percent of GDP, because you lower GDP, which has happened, it looks like the percentage goes up. The cause is not that we're gaining so much revenue or spending so much. The cause is also that GDP is so damn low. You see, that's how they play their games. And you know, the average person, it sounds convincing. Oh, you know, and if you call them on it, they say, well, these are the numbers. But whenever they want to play games with numbers, they usually say as a percent of GDP. That's one of the ways they make it look worse than it actually is. Okay. So today I want to talk about an update, maybe, for a number of items. One is the budget debt ceiling discussions going on. What have they agreed to so far? And what looks like they probably will agree to? Because they have agreed to some things, and I'll talk about those going forward here. But I also want to give some updates to some other topics we've been talking about in the last few weeks here, which are all related. All these economic things are related. I want to make a few comments on the Federal Reserve rate hikes still coming. I want to talk about inflation, both in the U.S. and EU. The bank bailouts going on, still going on, hundreds of billions of dollars of bank bailouts. No one's even raising that issue, you know. The de-dollarization trend going on. Artificial intelligence taking off faster than we've even probably assumed it would. Okay, I mean, we've been talking about these things all week, month long, several weeks since March, and it's worth an update because they are all related, you see. Okay, so let's jump into this latest developments, updates here to the debt ceiling dance going on. The theater, the political theater, the debt ceiling. Okay, it's mostly political theater. Of course, it's real as far as austerity is concerned. It's not the debt ceiling. It's just an excuse to cut programs here. The Republicans don't want to wait until the next budget is determined next September. They want a second bite of the apple. You know, Republicans voted, the House voted for a lot of these things that they want to now take back and cut. You know, this is part of the way the political system works. They give with the right and they take with the left. okay, so the McCarthy bill, which was officially thrown out there in April, called the Limit, Save, and Grow Act of 2023. Limit, save, and grow. Grow the economy, right? By limiting spending and increasing savings, somehow you're going to grow the economy. Okay, keep in mind that that bill, or that proposal by the Republican House, passed by the narrowest of margins, 217 to 215 votes. I mean, McCarthy's talking like he's got a big, big mandate here, and he's going to force it, you know, on the government and the Democrats, 217, 215, which some Republicans even voted against. He's got a razor thin margin, and he's talking like he's got a mandate. Right, you got to understand the politics behind this, particularly on the Republican side, which means that McCarthy is just a mouthpiece for the Freedom Caucus, the ultra right Republicans in the House of Representatives. Right? Don't forget that he was barely elected, and therefore even more dependent on this Freedom Caucus, whatever they want. They're really driving this thing. It took 15 votes in the House for him to get an agreement by the Freedom Caucus to be the Speaker. So he doesn't dare deviate from what they want, you know, the Matt Gaetz and all these crazies there, right? Keep in mind, too, that as part of him being elected in the House by his own party as the Speaker, that part of the deal is that any member in the House, any single member, can raise a motion to vote on removing him. All it takes is one person, one Republican, to put a vote to the House to get rid of him, right? And that election will occur at any time, a snap election to remove him. So this guy's walking the tight wire, right? And he doesn't... He doesn't dare, you know, look askance at the Freedom Caucus, or they're going to dump him, right? So it's really the Freedom Caucus driving all these massive cuts that they want. And, of course, they've got the excuse that we have a $31.4 trillion deficit, up from $22 trillion when Trump left office, right? $22 trillion to $31.4 trillion. The deficit and debt, because the debt is just the accumulation of annual deficits, are accelerating. As I said last week, the total national debt in 2000 when Bush came into office was about $4 trillion. When he left office, it had more than doubled to over $8 trillion. When Obama left office in 2016, it was $17 trillion. When Trump left office in 2020, as I said, it was about $22 trillion. And now, it's $31 trillion. Why is it so high? Well, because they had to throw $3 to $4 trillion at the economy in COVID, and because the revenues have collapsed. Government tax revenues, because of the Trump tax cuts and the no growth, the recession during COVID, and the very weak recovery going on right now. Okay, so that's why we've gone from 22 to 31 trillion, $9 trillion. All right, so they do have a long-term problem. They know it. And the problem is, the interest payments on the debt, you know, to bondholders, treasury bond buyers and investors and so forth that buy the government debt. The government has to pay that or they can't raise money, right? The interest on it now, this year, is $600 billion, up from about $280 billion in 2019. It's up to $600 billion, more than doubled in 4 years. And it, conservatively, I think, is going by 2030 to $900 billion a year. Now, that's the problem with the deficit, you see, because they're going to pay their capitalist bondholders every year out of the budget. And if it's gone from less than $300 billion to $900 billion here in a couple of years, well, more than a couple of years, but let's say $600 billion, let's say $700 billion here by 2025, right? If it's $700 billion, and they're going to have to pay that, and they will pay that because they're capitalists, and they will pay the capitalists, right? First, if it's going to $700 billion, well, then they have to cut somewhere else, you see? That's the real issue here. It's the interest rising by hundreds of billions of dollars. It's not the absolute level of 31.4 going to, oh, who knows, 40 trillion. I mean, if it were 40 trillion and it were on a 1% interest rate cost or less, well, then, you know, the outflow maybe would be every year about $300 billion. But it's $700 billion now. And if you're going to pay the bondholders $700 billion a year, well, then you're going to have to not pay somebody else as much as you have been. And who is the somebody else? Well, it's either defense spending or it's non-defense spending. Discretionary. We're talking about discretionary now, not mandatory programs. For those, eventually. Mandatory meaning, you know, Social Security and Medicare and you know, those guaranteed programs that have to be paid. Discretionary is, you know, where they have some control over education spending, transportation spending, health spending, et cetera. And defense spending. Well, they're not going to cut defense spending. You can bet that. So how are they going to pay the $600-700 billion in interest without going after social programs? That's what this is all about. Because they got their wars going, and the wars are key to maintaining the global U.S. economic empire and its hegemony. They're not going to cut the military. You know, we saw that back in 2011 with Obama. As I said last week, that's the template for what's happening now. Obama passed $787 billion in 2009, stimulus to try to get out of the Great Recession. Didn't do very well. Had to add another $25 billion for cash for clunkers, old automobiles, another $25 billion for first-time home buyers. So, you know, really over $800 billion in stimulus. We got a very weak economic recovery for 6 years under Obama, about 60% of normal GDP growth. And then, of course, we get Trump. So what happens is the deficit keeps rising under Obama. Right? And we end up, instead of a $8 trillion debt, national debt, we end up with $17 trillion under Obama. So that's like the template. And we're seeing that same template applied right now. We're in the early stage of it. They threw even more, $3 to $4 trillion. A lot of it was unnecessary. But they threw it at people who didn't need it during COVID. I'm not talking about the average folks. I'm talking about businesses and corporations. You know, almost $1 trillion given to small businesses. Yeah, supposed to have been loans. They actually were grants. They gave them the money for free, nearly $1 trillion. A lot of those companies, small businesses, weren't so small. A lot of scamming by larger companies claiming that money. Money was thrown at large corporations, medium and large corporations as well, who didn't need it. Remember the airlines? They got $52 billion from the government in 2020, 2021. $52 billion. They were supposed to keep their workers on the job. That was called the Payroll Protection Program. Remember that? $52 billion for one industry. What did they do? Oh, they laid people off and kept the money. They scammed it. And that was repeated industry and industry. A lot of money was scammed. But we ended up with $3 to $4 trillion spending as a result of it. But it really ballooned the deficit. But it's the interest payments that are the key, you see, the $600-700 billion a month. They got it a year. They got to do that. Right? They got to pay those bondholders. It's capitalism. They come first. By the way, as an aside regarding that, the big banks and investors are now meeting privately with Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen so that if it looks like a default in June, that somehow they're going to keep getting their money. You see, they're at the front of the line when that occurs. They, you know, government, worst-case scenario, may end up sending government workers home without pay, right? But they're not going to do anything about cutting off those debt payments to the capitalists. That will continue. And they're making sure that that will continue. But if we hit, a real, which I don't think is 50-50, a real debt default situation, right, then some of these payments to the rest of the economy is going to be cut down or cut off or temporarily. But I don't think June 1st and June 15th is really a deadline date should the worst-case scenario happen. And besides, they're agreeing. I think there will be an agreement between Biden and McCarthy, and we'll talk about some of the outlines of that beginning to emerge. But, you know, commenting on McCarthy further here, as a mouthpiece for the Freedom Caucus, right, already made a comment about his fake claims of spending and revenues as a percent of GDP, he's also making it clear, and he says, this is about spending. That's a direct quote. Of course, he should put some adjectives in there. He should say, this is about social program spending, because it's not about defense spending. And there's nothing about it being about the Trump tax cuts, reversing those. You know, $2.7 trillion will be the deficit impact, according to the Congressional Budget Office. He's not saying anything about that. Another quote of interest here, he says, quote, borrowing from China to allow workers to stay home is not the American way. Borrowing from China, what does it mean? That means that the budget deficit every year is, quote, financed. The deficit is paid for, ultimately, by selling treasury bonds and other securities to foreign countries, who recycle the dollars that are accumulating offshore because of other government U.S. Empire policies, like running a chronic trade deficit, means that the money dollar outflow increases every year, and it ends up in a lot of it in foreign central banks and private banks and wealthy investors who buy treasury bonds. So, in other words, the U.S. sells treasury bonds to China. Quote, it borrows money from China. It borrows back the dollars that float offshore, in this case from China's central bank, People's Bank of China, other central banks too, you know, Japan's central bank and others, buy U.S. treasuries, right? So the U.S. is borrowing to cover the deficit that is occurring in the U.S. because of lack of tax revenues, because of Trump tax cuts and slow growth, and spending increases, primarily for the Pentagon and other defense spending. So that's what he means, borrowing from China. What does it mean to allow workers to stay home? Well, allowing, quote, stay home. This is about whether single adults in particular or the poor are able to get Medicaid, insurance, or cash assistance in the form of TNAF, that's what we used to call welfare, right? Cash assistance, right? Or food stamps. Now, Biden has already cut the extra food stamp payments that existed under COVID, right? That's already been cut. But the Republicans want more cuts in food stamps. They want to apply what's called a means test for single adults from the age, I think the age limit is 18 through 50 right now, or 49, I'm not sure. Single adults, the Republicans want them to go to work to get it. And there's two issues here, or actually three. There's a means test. In other words, you've got to show that you're working to get it, or that you're in a job training program, right, in order to get Medicaid insurance, right, health insurance, if you're a single adult, not if you've got a family, but if you're a single adult in that age group, 20 or 19 through 50, I think it is, or maybe it's 49, you got to show you're working or in a job training program if you want to get Medicaid health insurance. And the same goes for if you want to get food stamps, right? You got to show that you're, if you're this single adult in that age group. Well, the Republicans are saying, 49 is not a good cutoff. We want to raise it to 55. In other words, if you're a worker, in that age group, and you're single, and you're getting food stamps, or you're getting Medicaid insurance, right? You got to be working, or you got to show that you're in some sort of job training program to get it. Right? So raising it from 49, 50 to 55 is one of the proposals. Also, you got a 3-month limit. In other words, you can continue getting it. You can continue getting Medicaid insurance and food stamps if you're a single adult in that age group for 3 months. After 3 months, you'll be cut off if you can't show you got a job, right? So it's not as horrendous a cut as people on the Democrat side are saying. It's not a good one, but it's not as horrendous. But most of these single adults here, beginning to show that it's mostly women, right, who are in that category. Single women, in other words. Okay, so that's one of the proposals in McCarthy's initial budget. McCarthy's initial budget also proposal called for a $75 billion cut in defense spending. Well, reports now, that's off the table, because they've agreed tentatively here, they meaning McCarthy and Republicans on one hand and Biden on the other hand, they've agreed to a 3% increase in defense spending, 3% increase, not a $75 billion cut, right, in the Pentagon, which would have been like a 10% cut in the Pentagon spending, well, maybe about 8%. Now they're going to get a 3% increase for the next year, which is starts in October, the 2024 budget. I don't know. It's not clear if that 3% continues for the second year, 2025. These budget years go from October 1st to September 30th. Okay, we are in the 2023 budget. Now that they want to cut, but the next budget starts in 2024, and that's where the 3% increase supposedly. I don't know if it's another 3% or it changes or it's different for the second year, because the rumor is they've agreed to a 2-year extension of the debt ceiling to put it above the next election, beyond the next election, right? 2 years. It's interesting that this 2-year ceiling or extension of the debt ceiling will still generate somewhere between $3.5 and $4 trillion more in deficit debt. Now think about that. Okay, $1.75 trillion minimum deficit in the 2024 fiscal year, they're assuming, and probably a $2 trillion in the 2025 deficit. Still, $1.75, $2 trillion. Are they really serious about cutting the deficit and the debt? I don't think so. Look, why not? I'll tell you why. Because at $600-700 billion, that's a golden goose to investors and bankers who are buying treasuries. That's a golden goose. Do you think the capitalists want to eliminate a $600 billion government payment to them, the banking capitalists, finance capitalists, every year? You think they want them to cut that golden goose out? No. They love it. It's a big flow. If you took away that nearly $2 trillion a year from bank bottom line, banking investor bottom lines, well, they'd be in a depression, right? The government and the treasuries are keeping the banking system afloat. And the same goes for if they don't keep the deficit then going, then foreigners aren't going to buy treasuries. By the way, China is cutting back dramatically on its purchase of U.S. treasuries. They had held at one time, I think, $1.1 or $1.2 trillion in U.S. government securities. Now it's about somewhere between $800 and $900 billion. So the Chinese, as this conflict intensifies with the U.S., are cutting back. Why do they want to be caught with the U.S. Freezing their assets? Like the Russians, the U.S. stole $350 billion of Russian assets here in central banks or in the U.S. and in the West. Just took it. Piracy. Yeah. Well, the Chinese are looking at them and saying, well, we don't want to be so exposed to U.S. treasuries. We better start dumping them, which is what they're doing, which really undercuts this whole imperial system called the twin deficits that I talked about, system that is key to the U.S. empire continuing, its economic empire continuing. I'm not going to get into twin deficits again, but basically it's just the U.S. purposely runs a trade deficit every year. U.S. dollars flow offshore because of the deficit in trade, but the countries recycle these dollars back to the U.S. buying U.S. treasuries. And that enables the U.S. to run a budget deficit because it's getting the money back from abroad buying treasuries, you see, which enables the U.S. to keep cutting its taxes for the rich and at the same time keep increasing its expenditures on wars. If the twin deficit collapsed, so would this whole game of how they finance the U.S. empire. All right, so getting back to the latest rumors on the deal, 2-year extension, right, which will then still create a $3.5 to $4 trillion deficit, increase further deficit over the next 2 years, which will raise the interest on the debt, you know, from $600 billion this year to probably around $700 billion by 2025, right? Maybe even more. It depends on not how much Treasury bills, bonds that the Fed sells, but also the interest rate. And if the interest rate is rising, the Fed's going to have to pay more. During Obama years, interest rates were kept near zero. Treasury did not have to pay all that much in terms of interest payments. Like I said, in 2019, it was still only about $280 billion a year. But now it's $600 billion going $900 billion because interest rates are rising, you see. That's a contradiction. The Fed's raising interest rates in order to stifle inflation, not so successfully, as I've said, but it's raising its interest payments on the debt, exacerbating the deficit, and therefore accelerating the national debt. Okay, so two-year extension is going to still cost $4 trillion in deficits. Defense up 3%. That's not clear whether it's just the first of these 2 years or the second as well. And that's only the initial position. I think they'll raise it more than 3%. Right? Or they'll say 3%, and then as needed to finance the wars, they'll add new bills to that as they go along. And that 3%, you know, floor reverses this 8-9% cut in defense that McCarthy initially proposed. Just like, Obama did. In 2011, $1.5 trillion cuts, $1 trillion was social programs, $500 billion was defense, but they never implemented the defense cuts. They just sort of let the whole thing continue, and they never cut defense, but they did cut social programs by $1 trillion. Another proposal on the table appears is the IRS in Biden's budget, $80 billion. He wants for the IRS to start collecting taxes from corporations and the rich, which they've been getting away with because the IRS does not have sufficient systems and headcount people in order to do the audits to make sure that the wealthy and their corporations were not engaging in tax avoidance and fraud. Which, of course, they are, right? That is cut by only $10 billion. That's the tentative agreement, cut it from $80 billion to $70 billion. So just the token cut there. Because if you don't have an IRS that's efficient and effective, then you're not going to collect the tax revenue you need to balance the budget. No, not even balance, just to reduce the deficit, right? So, you know, cutting there may save you $10 billion, but it may cost you $20 billion in tax revenue collection. Right? I mean, even dumb Republicans could figure that one out. Right? It's not clear, but it appears a 3% increase in veteran benefits is part of this defense. I'm not so sure about that. I believe they will cut. They will provide a means test for single adults, working-age adults, who are receiving food stamps and or cash assistance. They won't provide a means test for people who are on Medicaid, getting Medicaid health insurance coverage. But they will for food stamps, I think, and for cash assistance. They'll raise it to 55 years from current 50, right? And probably agree to extend the three-month limit proposal to maybe 4 or 5 months. I don't know. Maybe even agree to a compromise on the age limit. Instead of 55, maybe 52 instead of 49 now. Split the difference. That's likely an area that both sides will agree on because Biden has already, he's already on the record for he agrees to a means test for food stamps, okay? So that's going to happen probably this weekend, right? Now, the 3% increase, right, in defense is probably going to be less than inflation next year, which will probably be 4 to 5%. As I said, so they'll say, and they'll come out and spin it and say, "Well, we're cutting defense at 3% because inflation's really 4 to 5%. So we're in effect cutting it, right? I mean, this is an oxymoron. You increase the amount you give them, and you say you're cutting it. But I suspect that's what's going to happen on that. Okay, there are some real constitution issues here in all of this, as some of you may have heard. technically, it appears the 14th Amendment, the Constitution, gives the executive branch total authority to do whatever it wants to pay its bills. It doesn't say it has to negotiate this with Congress. It has the authority to do it. Well, the House is saying, no, you know, the House has under the Constitution all moneyed responsibility, right? Moneys originate to pay for programs have to originate in the House of Representatives, right? That's in the Constitution, too. So you got a contradiction in the Constitution, which prevails, right? And then there's a question, you know, well, the House agreed to these programs and these bills when it passed these proposals previously, and now it's coming to, we want to change it, right? They want to take away what they really already agreed upon. And there's a slight constitutionality issue there as well. So we've got some Constitution issues. I mean, if Biden really had some backbone and he wanted to, he'd just say to McCarthy, you know, look, we're going to do this 14th Amendment. And if you want to, we're going to pay our bills. And so what would McCarthy then be able to do? I mean, if he just paid the bills, I mean, the bankers would be okay with that. And so would, you know, the rest of the program recipients, they'd be okay with that. And no crisis there, right? No one's going to sue the government for paying them, right? And what would the House and McCarthy do then? What could they do? I guess they could try to sue the government, which means it drags out for who knows how long. They could break this whole process of debt ceiling games that are played. By the way, this is the 79th time that they're raising the debt ceiling. You know, you think they're not going to do it 79 when they did it 78 times? No. Okay. You know, it just shows how ridiculous the whole thing is, really, when you think about it. It's not ridiculous. It's about austerity program cuts. That's what it's all about. Debt ceiling is just a cover for all that. Right. Some other provisions in the Republican bill here want to cap spending growth at 1% for the next 10 years going forward, right? A ceiling on spending for the rest of this year and a 1% cap on average of everything, which supposedly reduces the debt by $3.2 trillion, right? Other estimates are $4.5 trillion spending cuts in this proposal by the Republicans in last April, $4.5 trillion. The Congressional Budget Office estimates $4.8 trillion. Well, that would just about pay for the Trump tax cuts over a decade, right? Not counting any continuation of the Trump tax cuts in 2025. It's interesting, two-year ceiling, right, that expires in 2025, just when the vote comes up to extend the Trump tax cuts forever, permanently. Just like, you know, Obama agreed to make the Bush tax cuts permanent in 2013, here, you're going to have a vote coming up in 2 years on the Trump tax cuts making them permanent just when the debt ceiling issue expires, the 2 year extension, right? So 2025 will be a big fight over that question, right? I think it's designed that way, 2 year extension. Get past the election, and okay, now what are we going to do with the Trump tax cuts and the debt ceiling going forward? The Republicans will play the same game in 2025 if they're in office. You know, if it's a split government, if it's not, they'll just ignore it, right? And they'll pass the Trump tax cuts well, you know, the debt ceiling, we're going to have to cut because we can't raise the debt ceiling anymore. Right. So what's going on now with the debt ceiling in 2025, this would be a minor dress rehearsal compared to what's going to happen in 2025 when the Trump tax cuts come up for permanent extension and the debt ceiling two-year current agreement expires. Right? Okay. Apparently, both sides have tentatively agreed not to cut mandatory programs, Social Security and Medicare. I believe, though, that that's still there in the background, and that they will attempt to do something about that, particularly if the Republicans have control of both houses of Congress. They will go after Social Security, and we may even see it happen here as part of a side agreement. Raising the that main cut will be raising the retirement age to 70, and they'll say, "Well, we're saving Social Security; we're not cutting it." See, that's how they'll spend that. In the Republican bill here, there's $70 to $80 billion leftover spending from COVID. In other words, the government didn't spend $70 to $80 billion that it should have, and part of that includes. Financing for $5 billion for a new vaccine, a new permanent vaccine. In other words, take a vaccine, a virus vaccine, COVID vaccine, that you'll be able to take orally, and it will be permanent. You won't need boosters and so forth. They're trying to develop that now. They're right in the middle of that, and there's $5 billion allocated for that, and the Republicans want to cancel that, you see. They want to cancel that, right? Part of that leftover COVID was supposed to go to bail out multi-employer pension plans. Part of it was going to go for health research. Republicans also want to cut, free testing equipment and free vaccines. And you got to take it again. There'll be a booster later in the year, and they want to cut that out. You have to pay for that, right? Republicans also want to cancel the student debt cancellation. In other words, get rid of it, right? It's been 2 years now that Biden has extended debt payments on payments on the student debt, and he can't get it actually implemented. But in the meantime, students aren't paying interest on that debt. Well, the Republicans want them to start paying interest on that debt and 2 years of back interest added to it. I mean, talk about indentureship. My goodness, you know. I mean, that's clearly, students are not on high on the McCarthy and Freedom Caucus' priority list, right? Also targeting renewable energy. They don't want as much spending on renewable energy that has been passed in the Inflation Reduction Act, right? Particularly, they don't like the idea of insulin drug subsidization by the government. And then we talked about the work requirements, right? I won't go into that again. That's in that proposal. They want, in the proposal, Republicans also want to deregulate executive branch regulations more easily and quickly. They want the power. In other words, they want to usurp executive authority. The Freedom Caucus wants that executive authority. And then there's some big fossil fuel spending in the Republican proposal. I haven't been able to vet out what that actually is, but some big further spending. Yeah, you're supposed to cut spending. Well, you know, we don't want alternative energy. We want the oil companies to get more, right? Moody's Analytics has estimated that the Republican proposal will result in 780,000 fewer jobs and will take 0.6% off of GDP. Instead of the GDP averaging about 2% the next 2 years, which is pretty low, it will be about 1.5%. So big impact, negative impact from this, and which will generate less tax revenues, by the way. Yeah. So not on the table, interesting, as I said, is the $2.7 trillion remaining Trump tax cuts. That's off the table. both sides have agreed, off the table is any additional aid to the Ukraine war. We've already spent over $200 billion from into that black hole. Off the table is any cuts to the Pentagon's $858 billion budget for next year, as we said, raising it even 3%, right? What about the $150 billion for Biden's per year for Biden's three corporate bills and investment subsidy bills that he's passed in 2022? You know, the Infrastructure Act, the Chip and Manufacturing Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act. Altogether, those three amount to $1.65 trillion, so about $150 billion. To some extent, the Republicans want to cut the alternative energy part of that. And then what about the Fed? You know, while all this talk of cutting social programs is going on, the Fed is throwing $95 billion a week into bailing out the regional banks. So we don't have more Silicon Valley Bank, First Republic Bank, et cetera, et cetera. $95 billion a week since the beginning of April. You know, the Fed is probably approaching close to $1 trillion it has thrown at these regional banks, pump up their liquidity. I mean, that's amazing when you think of it. Well, as I've said so many times, that's why the Fed was created. So the banks can be bailed out, even when they don't need it. And the politicians in Congress can look the other way and aren't responsible for it. If the Fed screws up, well, then, you know, it's point the finger at the Fed. If the Fed succeeds, well, then take credit. That's why the central bank is created. Take the heat off the legislature and give a banker run, essentially, still, institution, the Fed, to bail out the banks. Yeah, $95 billion a month. Going to the, a week, going to these banks. Almost $1 trillion in a couple months now, with no end in sight. Yeah, well, there is a deficit and debt on the central bank side, in addition to this $31 trillion on the congressional side, and that debt is now $9 trillion. And what are they doing about that? Well, I can tell nothing, because the politicians aren't supposed to touch the Fed, you see. The Fed is controlled by the banks, so that's off the table. So Trump tax cuts $2.7 trillion off the table in these negotiations. The Fed's $95 billion a week is off the table. Biden's three corporate bills is mostly off the table. Pentagon is off the table. Ukraine is off the table. They could solve this thing overnight just by addressing those areas, but they're not going to. They don't want to. Yeah. Okay, just real quick, some other developments. Inflation. As I've said before in previous shows, the U.S. is stuck at about 5.5% core inflation. Energy prices are coming down because the global economy is slowing, right? Same thing in Europe now. We got 6.3% core inflation. Headline is when you add energy and food. Food's coming down a little bit at the farm because of seasonality, but not coming down really in processed food industry. Fed rates, the Fed will raise rates another 0.25%. But it will depend upon what comes out with the next inflation and jobs reports. But I suspect they're not going to have much big improvement there. So the Fed will raise rates or pause in June and raise them in July. I think probably another 0.25% hikes June and July are in the works. After that, you know, it exacerbates the regional banking situation, but the Fed's throwing $95 billion a week at that, so it thinks that's going to be okay. De-dollarization, we talked about that. That's going on. More global energy and industrial commodities are being bought with other currencies than the dollar. Even France is using rubles, rubles to buy Russian oil, yeah, through Turkey and the UAE. United Arab Republics are are using its currency to buy and sell oil. So the yuan, the Chinese yuan, it looks like the alternative currency is not going to be the yuan, but a basket of goods, a basket of currencies, rather. You know, the U.S. Global trade dollar, 50% of global trade's in the dollar now, only 7% is the yuan. So it'll be a basket of currencies. And these countries, which is ongoing now, will set up a kind of clearinghouse to exchange their currencies back and forth. So the de-dollarization continues, in other words. AI, we had a show about that. AI is taking off even faster. Reports here, NVIDIA, the chip maker, it reported 50% increase in revenues. And we got a boom now going in the NASDAQ tech sector because of big increases in expectations in profitability and probably productivity, because you're going to have massive layoffs, as I said, as a result of AI. And even Goldman Sachs says 300 million jobs are going to be lost. Well, that's going to boost productivity, which I said is in dire straits in the U.S. So that's an update on AI and de-dollarization shows we had earlier, inflation and Fed shows. And they're all related here. And next week we'll see probably a further update on what's going on with the debt crisis, because we will pass that June 1st fake deadline date on Wednesday. Okay, that's it. I'm out of here.